cities of Unalaska and Dutch Harbor, and we also strive to provide services through a toll-free number to Adak, Atkes, Nikolsky, Sandpoint, King Cove, Akutan, Cold Bay, Nelson Lagoon, Falls Pass, St. Paul, and St. George. Families living in our region have limited resources when dealing with issues such as domestic violence, sexual assault, child abuse, elder abuse, suicide, and other types of crisis. This lack of services, combined with a high cost of living, the isolation of island life, extreme weather, and a high rate of alcohol and illegal drug use are major factors contributing to the problems and heightened stress levels for families living in our region. Over the last several years, major changes in the fishery have negatively impacted the economy of the area. Ironically, this situation of financial uncertainty, which may threaten our local funding, also creates a climate in which family violence, incest, and sexual assault flourish. Over the last several years, USAFE has experienced a significant increase in the number of clients served and services provided. For example, in FY99, USAFE provided services to twice the number of clients as we served in FY98, and more than twice the number served in FY97. In just the first 7 months of FY00, we have already provided services to 152 clients, that's women, children, and men. In FY99, we provided 254 nights of safe shelter, more than five times the number provided in FY98, and more than eight times the number provided in FY97. In the first 7 months of FY00, we already provided 139 nights of safe shelter. USAFE has successfully met the increased demand for services without an increase in state or local funding for the last 2 years. At the same time, we have continued our work to reduce future domestic violence and sexual assault through outreach and education. Our children's outreach advocate visits the local daycare providers, Head Start program, and grades preschool through six, working with children on personal safety, self-esteem, conflict resolution, and peacemaking skills. Our community outreach advocate is currently working with our school district to bring a program to grades 7 through 12, teaching young people about dating violence, date rape, and healthy relationship and communication skills. We also do presentations to healthcare providers, emergency medical personnel, religious groups, major employers, and many other community groups. My understanding is that the $335,000 cut to CVSA could result in a cut of $15,000 to $20,000 to each domestic violence program in the state. If USAFE is forced to take such a cut, both the children's outreach advocate and community outreach advocate positions would be eliminated, and we would be unable to provide education to our community. If we're cut and the demand for services continues to increase, our ability to staff our crisis line and shelter could be compromised. We do a good job providing increased services without increased funding, and so does every other domestic violence and sexual assault program in the state. Please don't penalize these programs for doing so much with so little. The work that we do in Unalaska makes our community a safer place and provides options for victims who have few choices. I urge you to reconsider funding for CDVSA and remember the victims, children, and families whose lives will be impacted. I would also like to briefly voice my objection to the recommended cuts to alcohol and drug abuse programs, mental health programs, and public broadcasting. In every community, but particularly in Unalaska, in rural Alaska, these programs work together to provide comprehensive services to their communities. Please don't cut these vital programs. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Now, we have one more. I think everybody else on the list you had is Paxton testimony, Mr. Roger Ruffs.
Okay, Roger, if you could be as brief as possible.
Good afternoon, folks, and thank you very much for taking the time to get our testimony. It's been a long day, I'm sure, for you as well as for us. My name is Roger Ruffs. I am the current general manager of Unalaska Community Broadcasting. As Kate mentioned earlier, we serve the area of Unalaska Dutch Harbor with four different broadcast signals, signals that are vital to what happens in the community here. Oftentimes, though some people do have cable systems here, we do have a local cable company. Oftentimes, because of the extremely adverse weather conditions, we lose that cable system, and so the only way that we can provide emergency weather information, road condition information, and other vital information for the health and safety of our citizens here is through KIL Radio, Channel 8 TV, and the other broadcast services that we work hard to provide. Once again, I think you've heard this all day long. I am stunned that, once again, public broadcasting is under the gun. We have worked for the last 10 or 12 years in order to make the system more efficient. We've done everything that the legislature has asked us to do in terms of saving money, taking care of our programs more efficiently, regionalizing, and it seems to be to no avail as far as the legislature is concerned. So once again, from all of my friends and community members here in Alaska and Dutch Harbor, we hope very, very strongly and sincerely that you do not force us to take these cuts. It will be devastating not only to the community of Unalaska and Dutch Harbor, but to the entire broadcast system as well. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman, just one last thought from myself that I forgot to put in my testimony. This is Mayor Kelly again for the record. But we need to come up with a financial plan, be it a combination of income tax, state taxes, community dividend programs, something. I just don't think we can continue to keep cutting programs, cutting fish and game, cutting ADEC, cutting DOT. I just don't think it's not going to make Alaska a very good place to live if we keep on this way without coming up with some more revenue. So I would encourage the House Finance Committee to take a hard look at some of these other bills that bring taxes online and community dividend programs, things like that. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon.
Thank you very much, Mayor Kelty. I noticed in Anchorage that we have my former colleague of ours, Cynthia Toohey, there. Cynthia, I'm going to ask you to try and keep the troops in line. I'm going to try and finish up as much as I can the off-net sites here or the teleconference sites. We'll get to Anchorage here hopefully by about 3:30. I've got Petersburg, Homer, Kenai, Matsu online. I'm going to try and a couple others. I'm going to try and take the top three people that I've listed for each of these sites and take their testimony. In Petersburg, I have Larry King.
Mr. Chairman, Larry King has left. The three that I have left in my office is number one, Tom Abbott, number two, Pat Hines, and three is Kelly Demko.
Good.
Number one is Tom Abbott.
Good afternoon, Mr. Abbott.
Thank you, Chairman. Thank you, each member of the Finance Committee. I'm Tom Abbott of Petersburg. You have tough decisions ahead of you, and I appreciate the opportunity today to be able to speak to you about the proposed operating budget. I'm here to ask you to stop the funding cuts to public broadcasting. The cuts have been coming continuous. Aside from, well, even last year there was a cut, but they have been continuous for at least 12 years. The system is still intact, but barely. Another cut, I believe, would be the final straw, and it would seriously damage the infrastructure of the communications of this state. It seems to me anyone who has ever listened to community radio in the rural areas of Alaska could not possibly consider cutting funds which help provide this essential service of timely weather forecasts, community announcements, live broadcast of community events, municipal events such as various board meetings, and of course city council meetings, as well as educational functions between broadcasts of ball games, of the kids, the concerts by the kids, bringing the kids into the radio station and getting them on the air to speak to their community, as well as school board meetings that are broadcast live on community radio. This happens with a 24-hour service run by volunteers of this small community. The population of Petersburg is 3,500. We keep our local citizens informed of local state issues that affect them and affect you as a legislature. This community of 3,500 donates $67,000 of their hard-earned money, and I think that if you were to consider that ratio, 3,500 people donating $67,000, if you were to cut your funding to this radio station, I believe we have tapped out our local support, and therefore our service would be denied, would go down greatly. One of the main services that luckily we do not have to institute too often is our emergency response. This is the radio station that is responsible for alerting the systems to an emergency, whether it be a spill at the airport or a crash or a chlorine leak at one of the canneries, whatever it may be. The radio station is responsible for coordinating between the various emergency departments, the police, the fire, and whatnot. We are a player in that whole system, and we are a very integral part of it. I believe one more funding cut from the state on this would be devastating to our service. And I believe the bottom line here is that what you provide through your funding is very much cost effective for keeping your citizens of this state informed as to what the state government and local governments do. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Tom. Patricia Hind and then Kelly Demko.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and committee members. I wish to address House Bill 312. My name is Patricia Hind. I am speaking as an individual and also as president of the board of directors for our public radio station, KFSK, Petersburg, serving Central Southeast Alaska. I've been an active member of public radio as a volunteer for many years. Remote areas all over our state depend on radio. Petersburg residents and the outlying regions rely on radio for weather, news, and entertainment. In Petersburg, city council meetings and school board meetings are broadcast live. Also, those emergency notices that Tom Abbott was speaking of, such as icy roads, mudslides, tsunami warnings. Messages to residents without phone service are broadcast 8 times a day. Money from the federal government is based on the amount granted by the state. Hence, every dollar cut to the budget for public broadcasting potentially hurts everyone who listens to and depends on public radio. Less money means less needed service to the residents of Alaska. I want to thank you for providing this opportunity to speak.
Thank you very much, Patricia. Last person in Petersburg is Kelly Demko.
Hi, my name is Kelly Demko. I'm a teacher in the Petersburg School District, and I'm concerned about your proposed cut to public education of $19 million. Our school has experienced continual cuts to our budget for several years in a row. Long ago, our music program was cut, as well as a counselor position. Last year, we suffered a huge loss of aid time in our classrooms and a reduction of special education services due to the new funding formula. The needy students do not lessen each year to coincide with these cuts. In fact, it's just the opposite. We are experiencing an influx of increasingly needy children due to several factors in our community as well as environmental factors that influence children's growth. Continually under threat are our vital swimming and library programs. We're doing our best to keep up with mandates from the legislature for testing with no added money. Every new year that goes by, we can only cry for the continual loss of vital programs to our system. We should be talking about a foreign language program throughout the school and an increase in technology training to help our children live and be successful in an increasingly competitive international market. We are unable to even talk about restoring the recent loss of programs because we're so involved in figuring out how we are going to keep our existing programs, let alone being able to talk about creating excellent educational programs for our children. We all know that the price of oil is high right now, and we are very aware of the money sitting in the permanent fund, and we know that something
creatively can be done with those monies to fund education fairly and rationally, besides cutting the budget every year. This just doesn't seem too creative from our perspective. I also would like to comment on this process of public input. I've been sitting here today for 4 hours waiting to speak to you. I know there are at least 200 other people who feel the same as myself, but it is physically impossible for that many people to fit in this room, and for a period of 4 hours. On the radio, you said if you hear testimony against what you have proposed, you will know people are unhappy with the budget proposal. Now you're saying that you cannot accommodate the very small number of people who are able to give input. This process is obviously inadequate. I just have one question in closing that I would like you to answer for the public as you move forward in this process. What has happened between last year and this year to justify the diminished funds to education and public radio as well? Thank you for listening.
Thank you very much, Kelly. We have allotted 2 hours for the teleconference sites. We, in fact, have gone 4.5 hours with the teleconference sites. I'm trying to be as fair as I can, Kelly, to everyone on the line. To that end, and we're 1.5 hours behind in Anchorage. So I'm going to go next to Homer to try to take the next three people in line there. Is Heidi Gannon or Charles Gibson there?
Yes, my name is Charlie Gibson. I've been on the board of directors for South Peninsula Women's Services here in Homer for 6 years. I'd like to talk about how the proposed cuts will affect the Council for Domestic Violence and Sexual Abuse Program. This will be brief since I'll just be restating a lot of the points that have already been brought up, and I'm sure you guys must be getting as tired as we are. First of all, I'd like to lend my vote for an income tax as far as the shortfall. This $335,000 cut is in addition to already being down $100,000 from FY99. Our programs have been struggling to meet the needs of our community in spite of the funding cut. And as others have brought up today, this takes its toll on the staff, already underpaid and stressed under the best of circumstances. These people are dedicated enough that they're not going to turn away people in need, but we can't expect this to continue without dire consequences. I would ask you to consider the long-term impact of these cuts. I'm sure you realize the extreme statistics of BV and alcoholism in the United States, and even thinking only in dollar terms, forgetting the human side of it for a moment, the cost of not treating DV seriously will far exceed the expenditures that we so desperately need now. This is obviously also true with substance abuse programs. I don't have the numbers right here, but I believe that one FAS baby costs us all approximately $1 million over its lifetime. That would buy a lot of education and prevention programs. For children involved in DVSA, either as victims or witnesses, it's been clearly shown that the cycle will not be broken unless we take strong positive action now. It is exciting to be able to turn the situation around and make our communities healthier and stronger. Ultimately, this will also save our state millions of dollars. I cannot imagine a better investment for all of us. Well, my timer is up. Thank you guys for doing your job. It's obviously difficult and a tough decision for all of us. Thank you
very much, Charlie. Is Frank Vandersaar or Dave Raskin there?
No, I think we have six left, and Cheryl McNally is next.
All right, Cheryl.
I'm Cheryl McNally, and I'm the local administrator for the child care program at home. Many of the families of this program could not pay their bills and full-time child care without the assistance of the state. These families need their jobs to stay off of public assistance. Their option is not to have a stay-at-home parent. Children, in turn, will be at home alone or left with people who may not be experienced child care givers. The future of Alaska depends on the quality of work the adults do today and the quality of child care their children get. Without these fundings, parents and children will be under added stress, and that could destroy the future. future of these children. With present funding, some of the communities will be removing families from their program to meet their budget. To decrease the funding even more would put an even greater hardship on the families that hold the jobs that are the backbones of our communities. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Cheryl. The next person I have is Jean Steele.
My name is Jean Steele, and I'm a mental health advocate, and also I'm a member and volunteer of KBBI, Homer's public radio station. KBBI is very important to our community and to its continuity, so I please ask you to keep public radio alive, not only in Homer, but around the state. The changing direction here, I've been a victim of sexual abuse and have been raised around alcohol abuse, which has had a very large impact on my life. The alcohol and drug abuse program and the domestic violence and sexual assault program impact basically the same population. Just within the parameters of these two areas, cutting funding to them will increase the problems of both. My main concern is the safety and well-being of children. The two programs that I have mentioned are programs which will affect generations to come. Adults need to be healthy and addiction-free. Some adults need to be educated and assisted in parenting skills. By keeping these two programs intact, by keeping or helping to keep adults healthy, both physically and mentally, we will be making a huge impact on the lives of our children and our grandchildren. If you will view drug and alcohol abuse and domestic violence and sexual assault as a type of a plague, we need to find a cure. We have an obligation to find a cure to this plague. It plagues the entire state, and our future depends on finding this cure. Thank you very, very much for listening to my testimony and your patience today.
Thank you very much. Mr. Landfield or Mr. Anderson?
Good afternoon. My name is Ken Landfield, and I thank you very much for this forum. For the last several hours, we've been hearing a very eloquent testimony from your constituents from Ketchikan to Barrow on matters that are dear to their hearts and essential to their quality of life. These are basic, fundamental, essential programs, and I'd like to see all of them fully funded. But I'm here to speak to one of those programs specifically. I'm the president of the board of directors of KBBI, which is public radio for the Lower Kenai Peninsula. I had several other of my co-board members here earlier, but they had prior commitments. I'm here essentially to ask you to reinstate the full $330,000 in public radio funding that is slated to be cut. As you've heard, we were asked to consolidate services and reduce expenses, and we've done everything that was asked of us. Our membership is, these people are the most loyal, supportive, and best-looking bunch of people that you can find anywhere. And every year, somehow, they manage to cough up a few more dollars, but it's just inconceivable that we can make up the funding that would be required from our membership. I think that the time for cutting is past. I think the time has arrived to grab the bull by the horns, wrap the left puppy to the ground, and come up with a new source of funding, as many new sources of funding as you can. If that includes a state income tax, if that includes sales tax, whatever source you guys can come up with, I really think that's the direction we have to go. Talk about timing. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ken. How many people left in Homer?
Two people left.
Okay, we'll take them if they can be very brief. I'm going to try and get to these last couple sites.
Excuse me, there were three people.
This is David S. Anderson. I've been a volunteer at KDBI Public Radio since 1981, and I was an employee at KDBI for more than 10 years. I quit KDBI 2 years ago because of frustration and burnout from a stressful workload, a low salary, and really no hope for conditions to improve. I know how hard public radio employees work and how little they get paid and the benefits that they provide to a community. With the restructuring and efficiency improvements over the last several years forced by budget cuts at the state level and the federal level, public broadcasting is one of the best public service values that the state funds. State funding is only a portion of the budget. Many dollars are raised locally, as you've heard over and over again, and are also matched and provided by CPB from the federal government. Community public radio is involved in the community, and the community is involved in the radio station. Public radio is essential not only to Bush communities, but also to some of us more non-urban communities, where we don't have the opportunities of performing arts centers, large museums, etc., etc. Public radio provides us with a window to the rest of the world for news, science, and culture that's impossible for us to receive from commercial broadcasting outlets. Without public TV, we lose Nova and Sesame Street, replaced with programs like Cops and Greed and World's Most Frightening Animal Attacks. Without public radio, there is no more Morning Edition, Mozart, or B.B. King. We're left with Rush Limbaugh, the Backstreet Boys, and Britney Spears. We need the alternative that public broadcasting provides. Please reinstate any funds you intend to cut for public broadcasting. I'd like to share an observation from a few weeks spent in Fairbanks last summer, a pretty conservative community. Reading the daily newspaper there, daily there were letters to the editor about the need for a state income tax and oftentimes a reference to reinstating the $10 education tax that was taken away many years ago. I think it's time to reinstate those programs for the benefit of the entire state. Thank you.
Thank you very much, David. Few brief comments left in there in Homa.
Yes, we have two people left.
All right.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and committee members. My name is Clark Chambers, and I'm a resident of Homer. I make my living as a journalist, and I am also employed in fisheries.
Good afternoon.
And I'm speaking to you today because I understand the concept of government as an interaction between the common citizens and their elected officials. News coverage on public radio helps us to make informed decisions here at the end of the road. And the ability to make those informed decisions empowers each citizen as a more effective member of state government. As a journalist, it is my observation that Homer is in need of all the information that can be accessed. So as a journalist and a supporting member of public radio, I see the need for continual funding of public radio because in order to maintain an effective state government, we must maintain an informed populace. And adequate funding for public radio is a vital component of this process. So please, don't cut funding for public radio any further. And if there are no questions, that's all I have to say, except thank you for staying inside on this nice day and listening to it.
Well, thank you very much for your patience, Mr. Chambers. The last person in Homer?
Yes, my name is Lynn Burkhart, and I live here in Homer. The greatest accomplishment of any government in the whole wide world is the permanent fund. 83% of the Alaskan people voted to ask you to continue it as it has been. I looked in the dictionary. A representative is one who acts in place of, and in this case, Alaskans, and carries out or repeats our message, a very clear message. On negatively, the dictionary had another definition. It was of a politician. A politician is a person seeking personal or partisan gain or scheming, which I didn't think was very nice, but I read it anyhow. Also, the to covet permanent fund, in my opinion, and others, is sin. Again, cut what you need to cut to leave the permanent fund alone. I feel I represent 83% of Alaskans. Now, politicians have a problem. I heard all day long everybody wants you to fund everything. The part that might help you with this is to let people know some things. First of all, if they're going to ask for more things, then it has to come from their federal pocket, their state pocket, or their local pocket. Also, they need to know that bond programs cost them more in interest and raise the government spending level above the limits set by the Constitution or government. And, well, I think sales tax is the fairest tax, but then nothing is fair. The cross wasn't. I think radio funding is very important to all these people. But my mother fed me for a while, and then I had to do it for myself. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Burkhardt.
This is the moderator. We didn't have one person come back that was going to come at 7.
I prefer to come back at 7 if you don't mind, because I'm going to really, I've had held people at bay in Anchorage for 2 hours now, and I really got to get there. I did have one person I cut off in Valdez, Sylvia Sullivan, who is off net. Are you there, Sylvia? Okay. On to Kenai. On to Kenai quickly, the top three people in Kenai. Lisa Greenleaf, are you there?
I am Lisa Greenleaf, and I'm speaking to encourage full funding for the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. My testimony is outlining my very personal involvement over the last year, having escaped a very brutal and life-threatening situation.
Hello?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes. Last year I was very brutal and life.
Oh, I'm sorry. This is Sylvia Sullivan down in Valdez.
Sylvia, I'll be right back to you. I'm taking Miss Greenleaf, and then I'll come right back to you, Sylvia.
Thank you. As I was saying, threatening situation with assistance through the Women's Shelter Program. I was with her on January 21st in 1998. I have one son, 10 years old at the time. He's now 12 years old. In March 99, I left my son with his grandmother to seek work and rebuild our lives in Juneau, in Alaska. I was raped the second day I was in Juneau. An advocate from AWARE came to the hospital and assisted me. After a month, the impact of this event crumbled me, and I went to AWARE for help and stayed in shelter for 3 days, then tried to go and put my life together. I met a man and became involved on April 12th and began camping with him. Within a matter of weeks, I received my first black eye from assault from this man. Less than 2 weeks later, he threatened to bury me alive in a 6-foot-deep hole he had already dug. I was beaten, thrown by my hair to the ground repeatedly over several hours, and refused shelter. I lay on the ground until dawn, and fortunate to be able to, walked over a mile to the police station where I began vomiting from trauma. The police took me to the hospital where I was met again by an advocate from AWARE. The back of my right hip and flank was deeply hematoma. There were several other bruises on my person. The hair had been ripped out of the right side of my head, and the hole in my head was unstitchable and bled for several days. I had bleeding and complications to my female organs that affected me over several months. I spent the next 3 days in shelter at AWARE, beginning physical recovery. It was described to me later that during that time, my eyes had the look of a feral animal, cornered and in terror. I returned to the relationship deeply involved emotionally, and over the course of 4 months, the physical, emotional, and psychological abuse escalated at a terrifying rate. During that time, I sustained several physical injuries and developed frightening health complications, including deeply bruised ribs from an elbow blow, a nearly dislocated shoulder. I was kicked and beaten in my bed by another man while my partner looked on. I was struck, isolated, sexually abused, verbally abused, had no access to medical help, and a chronic bronchial condition turned to borderline pneumonia. The emotional tortures were terrifying and deeply impacted.
After being abandoned in frail health and without food for 3 days with bear in the area, I crawled off the mountain I had been living on and sought help at the Aware shelter. During the next 3 months, I lived in shelter at Aware. They assisted me in attaining counseling, provided education about domestic violence, support, safety, assisted me in applying for and getting work, a 5-week internship at Perseverance Theater. The shelter staff helped me access medical care. They referred me to TLC and WRCC in Kenai and helped me transfer to TLC where I am living now. TLC and WRCC has helped me find and continue counseling, provided transportation, access to community services, including voc rehab, helped me through my grief from losing my husband, provided further education, taught me tools for recovery, and are helping me rebuild my life with help, where I live in a safe and nurturing environment where I'm becoming able to reach my goals for rebuilding my life and will be able to have my son with me again when the school year closes this summer. I am grateful for these services, and as a survivor of domestic violence, I'm glad to be blessedly alive. I would ask that you please continue to support full funding with the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. Thank you very much.
Lisa, thank you very much for that testimony. We'll come right back to Kenai, but Sylvia, are you still there?
I am. Can you hear me?
Loud and clear.
Very good. Yes. This testimony that's being given is being, I am videotaping it, and it will be going to the Internal Revenue Service. And I suggest that all people who are begging this legislature to contact the IRS, because our permanent fund is being exempted from federal taxes because it's supposed to be used for a public purpose. All of you who have testified know that that's not true. We are the wealthiest state, richest state in the nation, and yet our people who need the most fundamental basic services is being denied. It is time for us to take the reins in our own hands, contact the IRS, that 1111 Constitution Drive, Northwest Washington, D.C. They will come in, investigate the use of this permanent fund. $27 billion is being invested in everything outside of this state, not in the state. Our permanent fund dividend is just crumbs to what we the people need. This legislature has shown you they are going to continue to cut. They are summed up, Gail Phillips says, whenever anybody talks about getting taxes. Well, we have working poor that cannot afford any income tax, any sales tax. It has got to stop now, and we've got to get rid of these legislators. So I say you're talking to deaf ears. Most of them are asleep reading newspapers in this room, and you've got to contact the IRS. They will get our money back for our use, and I hope that many of you out there will call me. I'm in Maldives, Sylvia Sullivan, and I'll give you the address again. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and for those who are not able to watch via public television, I don't see a single newspaper here around the table, and we have 7 or 8 members here listening to the testimony, so I object to that testimony, Sylvia. The next person is James Fisher in Kenai. Jimmy, are you still there?
Kenai, yeah, this is Kathleen, the moderator here. We're down to number 1, Bill Hatch, number 2, Zane and number 3, Tim Peterson.
Very good. If you could keep your testimony as brief as possible, Mr. Hatch.
I can do that. I'm Bill Hatch. I'm president of the board of Pickle Hill Public Radio, KDLL, and want to testify in support of returning public radio funds. We've taken a 70% cut over the last few years, and we have, at your instruction, learned how to do more with less. We're raising more local money. We're doing our level best to decrease our dependency on public funds. We've offered community services, community announcements, call-in shows, local news, and the kind of local programming that is less and less commonly available on commercial stations that are just satellite operations from outside. So public radio voice in this state. The impact on our radio station, KDLL, of your cuts, I can't tell you for sure what it's going to be, but I really fear that we are once again going to be a repeater for an Anchorage station, because we are not going to be able to go forward and become an integral part of the community. And I know the community values us, because this morning I was getting signatures on the on a petition, and almost every person that I talked to said, yes, we support a public radio. I collected 80 signatures in about an hour, so I know the public support is there, and we look for your support also. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Bill, and I'm sure if you fax that down to Representative Phillips, I'm sure she will circulate that to the rest of the Finance Committee members.
Thank you.
The last two people in Homer quickly, or in Kenai quickly.
I am Zeta Friedersdorf. I'm a teacher in the school district. As an elementary teacher, I've been speaking to this body for the past 20 years about the need to adequately fund education. Yes, we know money is now in shorter supply, but we have already faced our reductions and sacrifices. We are now well past asking school district employees to do more work for less pay. We are now sacrificing our children themselves. We have gone from class sizes of 18 to 22 students to classes of 25 to 30 in the elementary grades, where students get their foundation for education. We are providing almost no funds for textbooks and materials. You asked us to teach reading with no books to read. It is a very well accepted fact that the schools are receiving more children from dysfunctional homes with serious social and learning difficulties. The public schools must accommodate all children who walk through the door. These children are not arriving at school ready to learn. Often they arrive tired, sleepy, stressed, dirty, poorly clothed, and hungry. At a time when the schools are asked to be all things to all children, parent, provider, counselor, social worker, disciplinarian, and teacher, the legislature is asking us to take care of all the personal and social issues of all our children and still prepare them academically to pass benchmark and exit tests. When these students don't pass the benchmark, we are asked to develop education plans to remediate before the next benchmark. We are not in any way saying that benchmark and exit exams are bad. In fact, they may raise our expectations and performances of our students, but only if we all do our job. You must do your part by adequately funding education to help us do our job with a reasonable class size, books, and teaching material. Your failure to fund education adequately will be your dooming to failure, the benchmark and exit test program. We challenge you to do the right thing, adequately fund education, so we can prepare our students to pass the assessment that you obviously value. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Zeta. And the last person in Kenai, I apologize, I should have said you could fax either to Gary or Gary Davis, Representative Gary Davis, or Gail Phillips. Last person is Tim Peterson.
I am Tim Peterson. I'm the president of the Kenai Peninsula Education Association, which does represent over 700 teachers on the peninsula. We are too opposed to the foundation funding being reduced due to the enrollment decreases of 3,000 students. The flaw in this reduction assumes that the corresponding reduction of basic operation of school occurred. You have to realize that the necessary services of teachers, support personnel, materials, classrooms, and administrative services do not go away because the school has a few less children. The cost of school operation continues. So these cuts are directly hurting progressive educational programs. Again, KPA respectfully requests that the $19.1 million be restored to the foundation funding formula. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We're going to, I believe I've got a couple more often our teleconference sites, but I'm going to go to Anchorage while I try and gather what is remaining out there in teleconference sites. For those in Anchorage, if you, for those who've lost patients, if you care to write or submit written testimony, I'm sure Jean or Barbara there at the office would be more than happy to provide you with communication paper to write down your testimony, and they will make certain it's faxed down here, and I'll personally make certain that it's included in the backup information. The first person I have signed up in Anchorage is Andrea McLeod, then William Thayer, and then Cynthia Tui. Andrea, are you there? Anchorage, did we lose Anchorage? Go ahead, Andrea.
Hello?
Good afternoon.
I see why lightning is the strongest control.
Yes?
This is the moderator. Can you hear us?
I can hear you loud and clear.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Could you let us know what members are there for the audience?
Sure. We have Representative Moses, Davis, Cisna, Phillips, Co-Chairman Terrio, myself, Mulder, Osterman, and Davies here right now. Representative Grusendorf just stepped out. Representative Williams is on teleconference. Representative Bundy is up in Anchorage right now at Monty Hanley's funeral. And Representative Foster just stepped out also for a moment.
Mr. Chairman, this is Representative Terrio. I also want the audience to know, like, I've stepped out to talk to my staff who is working today. I've got this on TV and the speaker box in my office, which is about 40 feet down the hall, so we can step out to our office and still listen to the testimony.
All right, Andrea, are you with us?
Yes, my name is Andrea McLeod. Can you hear me?
Loud and clear. Good afternoon.
Okay. Good afternoon, Elvin. I would like to speak to you about the budget process and how we do business in general. I was involved with the Commission on Privatization and Delivery of Government Services as a staff member, as well as being a volunteer on both the Office of the Governor and Department of Administration subcommittees. What the various subcommittees discovered was that the cost of performing specific state services is not available.
differentiate between direct and overhead costs for the various state programs in any standardized manner. Alaskans are fortunate in that the Commissioner of Administration, Bob Poe, is one of the original program designers of ACCESS. With that kind of expertise on hand, I've no doubt that through a bipartisan effort on everyone's part, our accounting system can be programmed to its fullest potential to capture the full costs of providing services. May I suggest combining the Office of Management and Budget and the Department of Administration Finance Division, home of ACCESS, so sound business accounting practices can be injected into the budget process. The result would be more reliable cost data to bring about a more efficient and cost-effective government, as well as help you in making the hard decisions about the budget. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Andrea. And I apologize to everyone in Anchorage. You could tell from the testimony today we have a lot of sites and a lot of individuals willing or eager to testify. Appreciate your patience. William Thayer and then Cynthia.
Yes, good afternoon. My name is William Thayer.
Yeah.
You have a tough and difficult job ahead of you, as is represented by the number of different issues that have been mentioned over the course of this afternoon and morning. Just to name a few, it's municipal revenue sharing, hard cost equalization, alcohol, tobacco, mental health issues, and arts funds. What I'd like to speak to you today about, specifically myself, is public broadcasting, the Division of Trade and Development, the Division of Tourism, and the budget for the University of Alaska Anchorage. The reason I'm presenting my perspective on these four issues is that I believe that not adequately funding any of them is a strategic error. Public broadcasting brings us together as a community across diverse states, geographically distributed state or population that needs to be connected through public broadcasting. I would encourage you to increase the funding for public broadcast. The Division of Trade helps us with our trading partners across the Pacific. We really are going to take advantage of our geostrategic position in the Pacific. We have to encourage the Division of Trade to do its work. Tourism, the Division of Tourism, offers a budget that increases new business and diversifies our economy. And the University of Alaska Anchorage is a strategic asset of this state, and it cannot be ignored. Its needs need to be fulfilled.
Sir?
Your arbitrary, self-imposed spending reduction is a result of this particular situation we find ourselves in today. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Thayer. I apologize for the brevity, folks. We're trying to give everyone a chance. Cynthia.
She had to leave.
All right, Kristen Schenker.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. I've been here so long, I forgot what time it is. My name is Kristen Schenker. I'm Regional Director for the American Heart Association, and I'm here today to speak in support of the increased appropriation of tobacco settlement funding for tobacco and prevention, tobacco prevention and cessation programs. My office is part of the Northwest affiliate of the American Heart Association, and our five state representative, only Washington, came forward last year with full funding of the tax settlement. I'm here to ask Alaska to step up to the plate. We appreciate the fact that the House Finance Committee has kept in the $1.2 million of the governor's originally proposed funding of $1.4 million, yet this is simply not enough to address Alaska's staggeringly high tobacco use rate. This year, we are asking for $2.8 million, slowly ramping up to the $8.2 million originally recommended by the Alaska Tobacco Control Alliance. This is a minute amount of the total tobacco settlement funding. It quite frankly bothers me that the state of Alaska is dipping into this pool of money to fund programs not intended by the tax settlement. Tobacco use, either actively smoking or exposure to secondhand smoke, is the leading cause of death. Please help prevent it by fully funding the tobacco tax settlement. Thank you.
Kristen, good to hear from you again. Just for point of information, the tobacco settlement funds are going to fund Medicaid services, so I think most people would consider many of those services pretty important. The next person I have online is Nathaniel Gabriel and then Megan Hall.
Yes, my name is Natalie Gabriel, and I'm a student at UAA. I live on campus, work on campus, and I am asking you to please keep UAA the $16.9 million in funds it was allotted. The university needs the funds desperately because I work in the library. The machines are continuously breaking down because there's not enough funds to fix them. There is no recycling on campus due to lack of funds. There's no recycling for students living on the campus. And instead of voting for larger per diems for the Senate and the House, you should be properly funding the school and the public radio system. We have to get rid of most of these legislators if we want change to occur, because they've proven time and time again that they, quote, solve, unquote, budget problems by cutting funds to essential social programs like the school system and public radio.
Thank you, Natalie. I apologize. It's a typo on my printout here. The next I have is Megan Hall and then Sherry Thompson.
Hi, my name is Megan Hall and I'm a current student at UAA. I'd like to speak briefly on the matter of the proposed university budget. The proposed increase is an attempt to lead the university in a forward, progressive direction. The university is not asking for anything that it cannot implement immediately, efficiently, and responsibly. Every penny of the proposed budget can be accounted for and will be directly applied to fixed costs, the expansion of existing programs, the development of new curriculum and industry that will help to provide long-term stability and economic growth for the state of Alaska and quality education for its citizens. The University of Alaska is committed to Alaska. It has a vested interest in developing new industries and preparing Alaskans to run them. The budget is focused on projects that will diversify Alaska's economy and develop new industries through logistics, information technology industry, and natural resource management, and addressing Alaska's current employment needs, specifically through teacher education, healthcare, and vocational training. Alaska is at a clear crossroads, and the time has come to recognize the value of the university and the potential that it offers to every Alaskan. The university is willing to work hard to stay, but the legislature simply needs to let it. If Alaska wishes to enter the 21st century rather than being locked in the 19th, the first investment it must make is in the University of Alaska. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Megan. The next person I have is Sherry Thompson and then Linda Spencer.
Hello, my name is Sherry Thompson. I am currently a student at the University of Alaska Anchorage. I'm a lifelong Alaskan. I was born and raised in Anchorage, although a native LA is my blood. I would like to voice my objection to having a 1 minute time limit when we are told we would have 3 minutes to speak. I think this proves that the apathy we are constantly accused of has been proven wrong by the turnout today. I'm in my second semester of my freshman year, enrolled in the nursing program, and am a senator in the student government. I'm not only a registered voter who votes in every election, I'm also a volunteer registrar for the state of Alaska. I currently live in District 19, and I believe that education is not a partisan issue. It should be your number one objective. I want to stress that funding for the university is an investment in Alaska's future, not a handout. Someday the oil money will be gone and we will need to have a viable university to stop the brain drain. A knowledgeable public is our most valuable resource. I'm working harder to get an education than I ever did working at any job. I have the backing of my entire family, 30 of 40 which are registered voters in the Anchorage area. My family does not have a lot of money. They are all hardworking taxpaying citizens. If I can accomplish my goal of getting a college degree, I will be the first person in my family to do so. Giving the university a giving me a chance to make a difference to the Alaskan community. I am asking for your help to let me reach this wonderful goal. Thank you for this opportunity to testify.
Sure, I apologize for the briefness. Gene, if folks are getting near the end, you can give them a little bit of slack. If people would like to remain on afterward when we finish in Juneau, if they're willing to stay around, I will be here until people have felt they've had the opportunity to testify tonight. So after the time allotted for Anchorage has expired, if you wish to stay around and stay till about 7 o'clock or come back at 7 o'clock tonight, we will finish up testimony from around the state. The next one I have is Linda Spencer and Graham Seib or Seiby. Linda, are you there?
Yes, hi.
Good afternoon.
My name is Linda Spencer. I'm a registered voter in Eagle River.
I'm 52 years old, and I'm a student senator at UAA. I have lung disease, so I can't be a jeweler anymore. I've returned to school, and I'm recycling myself in the computer science department. My daughter left Alaska with 6 scholarships of Alaskan money. She graduated from the University of Washington, and like 80% of Alaskan students who leave for other universities, she hasn't returned. Alaska not only lost a valuable student and person, they subsidized her exit from our state. After a decade of budget cuts at the university, the computer science program, which I am counting on for my future, has been devastated. 2 years ago, we had 4 professors. Today, we have 1. Our computer science program is not accredited. Every year, 150 students enter the computer science program. Each year, less than 10 graduate. What these numbers mean to me is that the university has not only been harmed by budget cuts, we have reached the point of no return. And unless the full funding to the university is restored, not just my career, but the career of other future students will be harmed. So I would ask you politicians to think about one thing. Consider the fact that the demographics have changed, that there is a majority of people in the state of Alaska who now favor looking toward sources of money, even if it involves taxation, to support university and other structures that are essential to the well-being of the state of Alaska. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Linda. Graham, next person I have is Graham, and then Elisa Culpepper.
Hi, my name is Graham Phoebe. I live in District 19. I'm currently a student at the University of Alaska. I'm attending there because I am one of the Alaska Scholars, a program that the legislature fortunately funded. I'd like to encourage you to fully fund the University of Alaska's budget request. I am at the University of Alaska. I am privileged to be learning from some of the most talented and determined people I know. Unfortunately, this does not make up for small libraries and out-of-date equipment. And with university funding slowly eaten away by inflation to all-time lows, even the people are in jeopardy. What you need to understand is that the skilled labor and experts that surround the university are what attract business. To give just one example, Intel, who, if you've been paying attention to the computer industry lately, could easily make up for the decline in oil revenues, nearly built one of its major facilities in Alaska, but chose not to, specifically because our university system could not support them. It is the responsibility of Alaska, and therefore, in my opinion, its representative, to make sure that we don't miss out on another opportunity to attract business and to improve the economy of the state. This is why I believe that allowing the university budget to be consumed by inflation will only make the state's financial problems worse, and why providing the state's university system with the funding it needs is one of the best things the legislature can do to help the state's financial situation. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Graham. Next, I have Elisa Culpepper and then Robert Rumpel. Or Rumble?
Yes, this is Elisa Culpepper. I'm chair of the Alaska Tobacco Control Alliance, and EC would like to thank the legislature for appropriating $1.4 million, or 5% of Alaska's national tobacco settlement funds during the first year. We have been working very closely with the American Lung Association of Alaska to begin new prevention activities this winter. National tobacco settlement funds are a unique opportunity for Alaska and other states to invest in preventing medical and human costs of tobacco-related disease in the future. However, the $1.2 million proposed this year falls far short of the $8.2 million that CDC recommends to adequately fund an effective effort in Alaska to prevent tobacco-related disease. We know from the other states that have put serious funding in tobacco prevention programs that we can make a difference. We urge you to consider our request of $2.8 million from this year's $30 million Alaska settlement fund. We ask that you reconsider how Alaska's annual share of its national tobacco settlement is being allocated to allow for more than 5% going to prevention. Additionally, as a public health professional, I hope that you reconsider cuts to Head Start and foster care programs. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Elisa. Robert Rumba.
Robert Fletch.
All right. And then I have Sam Rose and Beatrice Rose. they'd like to testify together, that'd be fine.
Okay. I'm Sam Rose, the dealer in my mom's left. But I just wanted to say that we've got about, we had one time we had about 70 people here. I think we got about half that now. We just multiply our testimony by two. How about that? I'm here to support public broadcasting. Lifelong Alaskan. I'm a member of the board of directors. And we have sustained many cuts in the past 2 years. And as many people have said today, we've done the hard work of consolidating and doing more with less. So at this point, these further cuts really jeopardize a lot of the stations around the state. And you've already heard from many of the rural communities how important it is to out there. It's very important to anchors as well. And these kind of cuts are the types of things that we would like to see. We don't want to see any more of these cuts as citizens. And I'd like to support the arts as well.
Sam, thank you very much, and thank you very much for your patience. Next, I have Phil Keith and Bridget Barrett.
Those two people have left, as well as Scott Ingram, Andrea Skystad, and Karen Roger. Obed Nelson is next.
All right.
My name is Obed Nelson. I'd like to briefly comment on three things. Number one, is the cut in alcohol and drug funding. To cut $1.5 million is going to result in a $3 million cut, which is about 12%. And it is estimated that this will deny about 1,200 people treatment. Every dollar spent on treatment returns $7 to the state in savings in other areas. Imagine, if you would, by treating these 1,200 people, how many FAS children will you prevent from being born? Each one, which would cost the state $1 million. So it's pennywise and pound foolish to cut the alcohol budget. Secondly, I would like to strongly encourage you to fund tobacco for $2.8 million. Again, one of the highest costs of the state of Alaska is the cost of the effects of smoking. And thirdly, I'd like to say, in terms of revenue enhancement, a user tax on alcohol of 25 cents per drink makes imminent sense. It would raise $70 million, and the 25% of people who drink 75% of the booze would contribute to some of the wreckage that's being caused by alcohol abuse. I urge you to strongly consider this. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Albert, for your testimony. Next, I have Judith Miller and Brenda Wright-Richard.
This is Judith Miller. Thank you. I live in East Anchorage. I'm here today representing a group of Alaskans who are concerned about the number of Alaskans who are dying or being disabled by heart attacks and stroke. Our group is called Take Heart Alaska and includes members who are businesses, hospitals, individuals, health educators, and nonprofit agencies. Heart attacks and stroke happen because people have high blood pressure, because they have high cholesterol, because they don't get enough exercise, and because they smoke. People who smoke are twice as likely to have a heart attack. Take Heart Alaska wants to reduce the number of heart disease, the amount of people that have heart disease and stroke in our state, and we can do that in this state by reducing smoking. I'd like to ask that you fund tobacco prevention cessation programs at $2.4 million. Thank you.
Well, Judith, thank you very much for your comments. Brenda Richard and Ed Ratliff.
Brenda, Ed, and Frank Dillon have left.
All right.
Next is Steve
Rose. Stephen, good to hear from you.
Hey, Eldon, I'll have to say you all look remarkably fresh today for having been there for such a long time. I speak on behalf of over 1,000 men, women, and entire families who labored to produce products in the state, often against great odds. With no money to hire an experienced professional lobbyist, they are left with the likes of me to carry their collective voice to you. I am pleased to hear today that the elimination of the Made in Alaska program is not the intent of the proposed budget cuts to DCED. This is a new position, the first I've heard of it. I wish to clarify a comment by Representative Terrio that the Made in Alaska program is primarily self-funding. We do need a restoration of the $50,000 in general funds. I urge you to adopt that amendment, and I would be happy to listen to a commitment to that right now. Furthermore, I would point out that long before Alaskans ever heard of Craig Holes, before you took up your current fiscal religion of results-based budgeting, the Made in Alaska program and its private sector contractor was living it. The $50,000 does not cover the cost of performing the work, required to adequately respond to over 3,000 inquiries, 1,800 permit applications, conduct verification procedures, on and on. Yet the results are 98% success rate of performing the work within the 30-day period outlined by administrative code. By disemboweling the Department of Community and Economic Development, you condemn these programs to die. All that will remain is the smelly carcass of a once proud and valuable department. I know you have tough choices, but hey, you asked for the job. Do the right thing, support additional revenue, fight for an income tax, quit this rigid lockstep march of carnage into the abyss, all the while chanting, we are your leaders, we're here to help you, follow us to safety. Other than that, I have no strong opinion.
Thank you very much, and for those who wonder, Steve is a very strong advocate for his positions, as you can tell. I do have one person on an off-net site who has been online, I understand, for over 4.5 hours. His name is Bob Elliard. Bob, are you still there?
I am, yes.
Bob, would you like? I apologize for not getting to you earlier. I was just made aware of it. Would you like to provide testimony at this time? I apologize to Anchorage, but I wanted to give Mr. Elliard an opportunity.
Yeah, I would like to just say one thing. There's been a lot of people saying, haul this and haul that. I used to work for the Air Force, and so I know how valuable the public radio is out there, because we used to use it to inform the people of our environmental cleanups out there. And it's something that you need to really fund. And all of these things need to be funded, but I think what you really should need to do is you really need to look for new revenue generators, and not just taxes, but I think you ought to open up the airports and ports and whatever to gaming slots and run a state lottery, get together with 4 or 5 states and run a lottery. These are revenue sources that you haven't examined for a long, long time, and I think they're viable revenue sources. You want to spend this money? Raise it. There's got to be some other way than income taxes. I'm not a big fan of income taxes, but I support it if you went that route. But like the other people who told you, keep your hands off the fund. They told you that at 83%, they're telling you that now. I really think that all of these programs are very, very important. I highly support the radio one, although I don't work in public radio. I don't have any connection with it at this point in time. I do know what it's like out in the bush. It is a very, very valuable asset to them. I thank you for your time and opportunity.
Bob, thank you very much. Where are you calling from, Bob?
I'm calling from Wasilla. I just, my daughter has a child in child care, and she wanted me to support that. And I would also encourage the child care thing, because, you know, the more kids that can be taken care of by child care, the more people who can work, the more money can be generated, et cetera, et cetera. So big downhill donut there. That's a lot of money that the state offers.
Thank you very much for that testimony, Bob. We actually have increased funding for child care this year. I was also made aware that Matt Sue has not, we've not taken testimony from Matt Sue. If you're a patient, Matt Sue, for just a while longer, we're going to go back to Anchorage and then come back to Matt Sue. The next person I have in Anchorage is Mary Rosenzweig and then Angie Rosales.
$5.60 for every dollar spent on treatment. This being the case, the proposed $1.5 million cut will translate to an additional cost of $8.4 million to the state. And if we include the lost federal dollars as well, we're looking at costs of as much as $16.8 million by fiscal year 2003. These additional costs to the state include such things as child protection, Medicaid, criminal justice, and other public assistance. The bottom line, treatment works, and in a time of fiscal constraints, it only makes sense to continue funding programs that ultimately save the state money. And on a personal note, as an individual, I would like to support full funding for the tobacco program. My father passed away a year ago after a long battle with lung cancer. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. The next person I have is Angie Rosales and then Terry Robertson.
Good afternoon. My name is Angie Rosales. I work for the Alaska Women's Resource Center in Anchorage as a domestic violence supervisor. I have worked for a council-funded program in rural Alaska and here in Anchorage. I've been doing this for over 8 years and helped hundreds of women. I'm here to support the Council on Domestic Violence, Sexual Assault, restoration of their budget of $335,000 to put staff there. It is imperative that the council is fully funded, that advocacy has the opportunity to continue providing intervention services to victims of domestic violence and sexual assault. Without intervention services, women are left with very few options, and it's a very scary process. I truly wish you would have been able to hear Cynthia Toohey's testimony earlier today, where she would have discussed her role as a legal advocate for the Alaska Women's Resource Center and her experience. But I please ask you to reconsider the cut to the council and look at other monies that are available to restore the budget through the permanent fund dividend stability money. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Angie. I apologize for mispronouncing your last name. Terry Robertson and Chuck O'Connell.
Yes, thank you for hearing me today. My name is Terry Robertson. I'm in child care. I own and operate three nonprofit child care centers. I've been in child care for 30 years. I represent 274 families within my own organization. The larger percentage of these people are dependent on daycare assistance. They are the working poor. I do understand there are measures being made to increase child care, but as the cuts stand right now, 440 children will be off of subsidy by June 30th, and likely more children will be dropped from the program. Elimination of approximately 1,100 more children who will be eligible for child care assistance are in jeopardy also. In Anchorage, we're in the process of increasing regulations as well as education for better quality child care. We're working with the University of Alaska to achieve this goal. Budget cuts for the University of Alaska as well as child care would prohibit this goal. These children cannot speak up for themselves. We have to be an advocate for children. I ask you to reconsider any cuts.
Thank you very much, dear. I'm sure you're aware that since 1998, we've increased child care funding from some 12 odd million to over 40 million this year. So we have made a major commitment toward child care. The next
part? We do appreciate that, but welfare reforms, there's lots and lots more people needing child care.
You bet, and we are fully committed to welfare to work. Next person we have is Chuck O'Connell and Katie Henning.
Chuck and Katie have left. Brad McGee has left. And the next person is Ruth Quinlan.
Good afternoon, Ruth.
Hi, I'm Ruth Quinlan, and I represent Abuse Women's Aid in Crisis, and I'm also here to support that you return funding to the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. The money that has been removed will cause decrease in service victims. As the largest shelter in the state, we remain at capacity the majority of the year and have at least 4 months out of the year when we have women and children sleeping on the floor in our facilities. There are not enough beds for them. If we lose funding because of this cut, we will end up having to reduce the number of staff in the shelter, and therefore, in order to keep it a safe environment, we'll have to reduce the number of women and children that we allow into the shelter. This will mean that there will be victims who have no place to go. There is no other shelter in the city that can accept them and keep them safe. And so my concern is that the cut to the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault will directly affect the lives of victims. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony this afternoon, Ruth. The next person I have is Ken Smith and Kim Anderson?
I believe both those people have left. Oh, excuse me, Kim Anderson.
All right. And then Marilyn Medina?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. My name is Kim Renee, and I also support AWAKE, which is Abuse Women's Aids in Crisis. And I'd ask the council to give back the money to the Council for Domestic Violence. I was in the shelter a year ago. My perpetrator is lethal. He attacked even the women there that helped work. My infant daughter was 3 months old when he began choking me, and the separation occurred with police involvement. I wasn't granted my child, even though I was breastfeeding, because the state of Alaska, equal rights, men have the same rights as women, happened in February, and I don't know if any of the council are aware of domestic violence, but when you're woken up at 2 o'clock in the morning and the person that you're with is raging and crazy and is going to kill you, there's no other option but the door, and I wasn't able to take my child with me. I fought it here through the legal system to try to get my child back or to try to make this snowball that has been created because of domestic violence. There is so much that goes on with the court system. We have a special DV office down here that just handles domestic violence, and there's so many ways to streamline the money instead of the way that you're trying to do it, because what's happening is you cut this money off, there's not going to be anybody that's going to be able to take care of us in the shelter. Already from last year's budget cuts, there's less opportunity for training in the shelter. They teach us how to stay safe if we have to go home. The women go home to their abusers because of the stress and things that happen and seeing their kids. And don't you think, Mr. Chairman, for a minute that that shelter life is an easy life for any of us. There's stress in there, there's kids screaming, there's moms crying, there's people having fits, you go into class to talk about the abuse, and one woman starts freaking out because it reminds her of something that happened to her, and then you have to just deal with it. It's not a life that's easy. And I'd like to tell you that we're talking about life and death here. These aren't easy situations, and there's other ways to do it. In closing, I'd like to share with you an article that as we leave the shelter, we write something to the shelter, like to close. It's a form that you fill out. And they ran it in the newspaper, it's Dear AWAKE staff, I came to you scattered, broken, emotionally in crisis, unsure of myself. Each of you gave to me what I needed to begin healing. The advocates were able to support me until I could put my pieces back together. These words here are so inadequate as an expression of my gratitude. Better for me to shout from the mountaintop that without AWAKE I would have died. AWAKE fought for me, walked with me through despair, and loved and supported me to choose my own path. AWAKE has given me a most precious gift, unconditional love, and restored my faith in God. I'm leaving AWAKE now strong and ready for my reentry into the world. I will never forget the challenges I faced here and how you stood by my side. I hope that this council in Juneau will stand by our side in Anchorage and support these things that we've heard today. It's very important, and I'm sure that you all could cut some of your budget costs instead of cutting our budget costs, because you're hitting the poor people, and there's some other people that have a little bit more change in their pockets than we do. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Kim, for your testimony. Marilyn Medina and Ken Wasson?
Both those people have left.
All right.
Paul, John, Davis, Brent, Doug, James, Norman, and Jeff have all left.
Okay.
Helen, Howard is left.
All right. Good afternoon, Helen. Thank you for your patience.
No problem. My name is Helen Howard. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska State Council on the Arts, and I'm here to testify against the recommendation of the Education Subcommittee to replace the $75,000 in general fund match with funds from the Art and Public Places Fund. I know the subcommittee didn't intend to hurt Alaska's ability to serve its constituents with this fund source change, but the fact remains it does. While the bottom line looks the same, the state law restricts use of the Art and Public Places Fund to produce public art purchases. ASCA will be forced to reduce its program budget by the amount of the Art of Public Places funds in its budget. This means reductions in grants and staff and elimination of program service areas. But that's only half of the problem. The cut in general fund match puts in jeopardy grant funds of an equal amount from the National Endowment for the Arts. I understand the state has a fiscal problem, but budget decisions of this kind only look at the bottom line.
Many of the recommendations you're considering do not look at the results of inadequate funding, the creation of ineffective government. ASCA will be forced to spend $75,000 on art purchases at the expense of our ongoing programs. Is this wise? I concur with others who have testified earlier. We need to identify other revenue streams to support our important state services. It's time to add to the budget to provide the services we as a society deserve and need. These include education, public radio, arts and museums, childcare services, you name it. Please find a way to make this happen.
Helen, thank you very much for your testimony. The next person I have signed up is Ed Bourgeois.
Bourgeois, thank you very much. Yes, we got that right. Ed Bourgeois, I'm the Assistant General Director of Actors and Opera. I'm also a performer at the Fly By Night Club. And I promise that if you support my position, that I'll convince Mr. Whitehead not to write terrible songs about you this year.
That's probably the...
realize what I have to say. I will not repeat what Helen just spoke to you about, but I am here to support that position. I'm very concerned as an arts administrator that matching federal funds can be lost with these kinds of transferences of funding, and arts organizations stand to lose very, very valuable funding. I know that you've sat here for the entire day listening to a litany of folks defending their own positions, their own organizations, all of which are extremely valuable organizations. And as an arts administrator, I sometimes feel that we're in a position in arts and culture and humanities of seeming, by comparison, compared to social service agencies, to be fluff and frill. I could spend longer than a minute telling you how valuable arts and culture are in education and in quality of life. I won't do that, but I would like to say that the slivers that we are here in this room scrambling over, all defending our own small slice of the pie, those very small slices are essential to our existence. The population, the citizens want us to be lean and mean, and I think particularly, I won't speak to other organizations, but arts organizations, I can say, have become very lean. We operate on 10% of the grant that we received from the Arts Council 15 years ago. And without that tiny little slice, we probably will not be able to continue providing the kind of services and arts programming to all people, not just those that can afford to pay for tickets. Thank you for spending this time listening to us.
Thank you very much, Ed, and give our best to White Keys.
You bet.
The next I have signed up is Herman Goodhope and Danita Solitaire.
Both of them have left. Joseph
D'Amato?
Hi, I'm St. Joseph Mateo. I'm a member of the Governor's Advisory Board on Alcoholism and Drug Abuse, and I'm here to ask you not to cut the $1.5 million from the Division of Alcohol and Drug Abuse. Does treatment work? Absolutely. I'm proof of it. I went into treatment 21 years ago and have maintained a responsible, healthy job all that time. So I know as a person that it worked. Now, to convince you, the state did a study about 4 years ago, and we hired a group out of Minnesota called New Standard. They came in, reviewed our programs, and found out that 65% of our outpatients were abstaining from chemical abuse, and 56% of our residential patients were successful. And this is consistent with findings elsewhere in the country, even though our alcoholism problem and drug abuse problem, I think, is much higher than other places. As Obed mentioned, we have an opportunity for an alcohol tax that will raise $70 million. So as a field, I would ask you to consider that. There was a group of... No. Tobacco. I want to support the $2.8 million for the tobacco. I don't know if you've seen the ads on TV that they've done, but I think they've been highly successful, and I've heard people talking about actually quitting because they've seen those ads. I've got other stuff here that says that drug dependency meets the criteria for treatable chronic disease. A number of doctors got together and did a research on it. And some of the things that they found, in fact, the likelihood of requiring additional treatment within a 12-month period is generally higher for diabetes, hypertension, and asthma than for drug addiction. Among the list of 500 health and life-saving measures, addiction treatment consistently ranks among the top 10%. It also went on to say the most dramatic return is the effectiveness of drug addiction treatment in reducing the occurrence and costs of related to crime. And we know you get a much more bigger bang for your buck for drug treatment than you do putting people in jail. Thank you for your time and your patience.
Thank you very much, Joseph. The next person I have signed up is Donald Heflin and then Christopher Canterbury.
Yes, my name is Don Heflin, and following Steve Joe, I'm a graduate of the Kielhaus program. At that time, Steve Joe was director. Currently, I'm in grad school at UAA in adult education, and I'm here to urge you to not cut any money from alcohol and drug prevention. I'm a recovering addict, alcoholic, and I represent a substantial cost to the community in terms of maintaining my habit. And I affect everybody probably in this room. Economically, I would think that you would have the insight to understand that as I hustle, as I did hustle on the street, I had to maintain a $100 to $500 a day habit. And maintaining that habit, you know, I taxed basically the business community and anyone else that would get in my way. Also, the cost of me going to prison is substantial. Anything that would prevent these costs on the state would be logically and reasonably supported. And I think that you, as educated and logical legislators, would understand this. I'm sure you have the stats to prove this. Currently, I got my first degree at Aquila. I currently have four, and I'm working on five right now. These degrees I hope to use to contribute to the community and not be a burden to the community. And I think there are many more people like me that are out there that are really underserved and underrepresented. And I feel that if this issue, you know, is not addressed really seriously, there will probably be a lot more. And I know that the cost to maintain all these people in prison is just amazing. So anything to limit that and prevent that would be helpful. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Heflin. Are the Canterburys there, Christopher and Michael?
Both have left.
All right.
And I believe Mike Thompson has left also.
Okay. Patricia Petrovelli?
It's better than that.
Support for arts and cultural programs, specifically level funding for the Sheldon Jackson Museum, and then the level funding of the Arts Council from the General Fund. And then, of course, I'd like to speak to support public broadcasting. I think these are both museums and public broadcasting are important parts of educational aspects. And, of course, listening to all the testimony throughout the day, you've heard many the value and benefits of these programs, and then listening to the other social service programs, they're also very valuable. But specifically, arts and cultural programs have have survived a lot of funding cuts in the past, and they've implemented efficiencies and alternate sources, and I think they've done a great job, but they need continued public support, and I think it would be detrimental and self-defeating to implement new and greater cuts to these programs, and I hope you'll reconsider that. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Patricia. Patrick Rumley and Michael Queen.
Patrick Rumley has left. Go ahead, Michael.
Thank you. My name is Michael Queen, and I am a retired firefighter EMT with the municipality of Anchorage. I was born in the territory of Alaska, down in Juneau, there at the old St. Anne's Hospital. I think you guys are using it as an office building now. I'm not exactly sure, but
As a result of my service with the Anchorage Fire Department, I left after 16 years with permanent disabilities, post-traumatic stress, as well as permanent hearing loss and spinal injuries. And in the course of my trying to live on a fixed income, and I decided to return to school to the university and pursue an education at 45. You know, I have another career in me and a lot more to give to the state in which I was born. I continue to be active in community service. I too am a recovering alcoholic and drug addict and served for 2 years between the time I retired and the time that I entered college as the director of a local nonprofit organization directly serving alcoholics in recovery. It asked nothing from the state or federal government. But I was appalled when I went to the university and found that after all the good times and even the lean times, we still have a third-rate university. We have a third...